first, I believe, the first company in the world 100% focused on designing and developing apps for Windows. So we've taken a real specialized approach, delivering world-class applications for Windows. That's what we do. The potential for Windows 8 is enormous. I think with Windows 8 in particular, there are some very specific things, such as live tiles, that are unique to that platform. Both on phone and on Windows, the numbers and the install base are huge. And when the platform launches, the numbers are going to grow exponentially. I think developers really need to think about Windows because of the potential of the platform, the numbers of people that are going to be using Windows 8 devices and Windows Phone 8 devices over the coming months and years. The opportunity is probably one of the greatest developer opportunities there has ever been in software. We're working with New Zealand Herald, Trade Me, Air New Zealand, Yellow New Zealand, 7 Digital, and a bunch of other clients we can't talk about right now. We use the whole Visual Studio Team Foundation server set up, including Visual Studio 2012, and Windows 8 apps have been a pleasure to develop in.
We started working with Sky in late 2010, and the first product we worked on with them is the Sky iPhone app. When we started building Sky app for Windows 8, we really went back to the drawing board a lot because we never actually designed the Sky app for a tablet first. One of the things we were able to do with Windows 8 that we've never really done to the extent we've done it before is include a sort of system-wide search function, so you can search to find a TV show from pretty much anywhere within Windows.
First app we released was a YouTube app. The first version that we released only took us about a week, and we sort of put it out in the marketplace. But the key thing is we were the only YouTube app on the marketplace, and this eventually led to MetroTube, which is now the highest rated and most downloaded third-party YouTube app on the platform, and it's currently in the top 1% out of all apps on the marketplace. With our Twitter app, we've already exceeded 100,000 downloads with our Twitter app, and Windows 8 hasn't even launched yet. You know, when this goes live, we could potentially be getting into the millions. Mike and I, we're just two guys. You know, we're a startup, small startup, and we're hitting it with we're building apps that, you know, Google could build. Just look at the people who jumped onto the iOS very early on. Look at the people who jumped onto Android early on. These particular opportunities do not come about often. It's not something that come every year, or, you know, a new, entirely new platform, an entirely new marketplace with this many users is extremely exciting. To me, I see this as probably the biggest opportunity since the first launch of the smartphones. Now, with Windows 8, it's both. It's a tablet and a desktop environment, and the opportunities are huge.
Our story really starts with transferring our web design skills into the app space. The demand for Windows 8 apps is taking us by surprise. We're talking to companies we are a little bit surprised that we're talking to at the moment. Obviously, I can't divulge all the details, but we're currently working with ESPN to develop a ESPN Cricket Info Windows 8 app, which has just been released to the store. So touch devices have really changed the way that people interact with devices, and I think Windows 8 is a massive step forward in that space. So as cricket fans, we thought really hard about how to use the tablet as a second screen while people are watching cricket on TV. The look and feel of the article pages on Cricket Info feel like a magazine. It feels like you're reading a typical magazine. It was all about the little transitions, animations, the orientation changes. Especially reading articles is where we spend a lot of our time just polishing the design. We wanted to build something that us as cricket fans really wanted to use, but we also felt the weight of responsibility to get it right for everyone out there.
Wow, okay. So hat tip to our friends, our Kiwi friends from across the ditch for supplying that video. Nigel Parker and his mates put that together for Tech Ed in New Zealand last week. We liked it so much we decided we'd leverage it. Welcome to Tech Ed 2012 and the kickoff for the developer tracks, if you like to think of it that way. When I set the theme for this, and I called this session "Stuff Developers Will Want to See," I knew that I'd set the bar pretty high. What is it that developers want to see? So I went back a step and thought, well, what is it that makes a great developer? And I came up with two things. The first thing is a great developer is boastful. A really good developer wants to show the world all the wonderful stuff that they've done. They want to show people the magnificent UX they've designed. They want to show people the clever stuff they've done behind the scenes. They want to show the people all the neat validation work they've done on the client-side UI. A really good developer is really boastful. And I hope that as you go through TechEd, you think about how you're going to boast about the stuff that you do to the people that really matter. And partly the people that really matter are sitting right next to you. Finding the connection, finding the synergy between you and the like-minded geeks that are in the room and in the conference this week is really, really important. I think the other crucial feature of any great developer is to be lazy. And seriously, seriously lazy, not wanting to have to do any work that they didn't have to do. Now, some of you will sort of question why that makes sense, but I want to take you on a little bit of a journey through a different industry. Now, some of you may know that my background is actually in civil engineering. I'm a civil engineer. That's where my degrees are. And I want to talk to you a bit about what's happened in construction in the last little while. This is how we used to build houses. Sometimes they looked a bit better than that. And sometimes they looked, you know, quite stately. And occasionally, they got downright baroque. But the thing about each of those houses is that each component of those houses was individually handcrafted lovingly by artisans. Each nail was drawn, each pipe was soldered, each beam was hacked out with an adze. Each one of those houses is absolutely individual, and each one of those houses took forever to build. What happens now is we have houses that are still unique, still different, still iconic, still wonderfully functional, but they're much faster to build, and the reason they're much faster to build is because we no longer have to worry about constructing each individual piece of roofing sheeting. We no longer have to worry about constructing each nail or each connector. We no longer have to worry about whether what style the electricity or the plumbing should be. That's all been standardized, and so the key thing is that you can spend your time as someone who's building a house architecting a vision as to what it should look like without having to worry nearly so much about how you're going to achieve the busy work behind the scenes. Now, I hope you're seeing the analogy I'm making here. As developers, it's really, really important. And I thought I'd change the title of the session from Stuff Developers Want to Know to Only Write the Code That Only You Can Write. What is it that you bring individually as a developer? What is it that makes an amazing difference that you bring? Is it domain knowledge? Is it the ability to construct a set of data sources from a number of different places? Is it the way that you construct a user interface? You shouldn't have to worry about the busy work behind the scenes. It shouldn't be something you need to worry about with things like validation and data storage and those sorts of things. That should be taken care of. So today we're going to go through a whirlwind journey of about 7 or 8 demos, and that's pretty much all the slides we'll see. There's a couple of slides in the various presenters' bits, but this is pretty much all the slides we'll see. Most of what we're seeing is demos, and the demos are really all about showing you how to only write the code that only you can write. So I want to kick this off with Nick Harris. Nick Harris is going to come up and talk about Windows Azure Mobile Services, which is one of the most recent things that we've released as part of our suite. So Nick Harris, please.
Well, thanks for having me back in my hometown of Australia.
Australia's your hometown, nice. Yeah.
Well, it's certainly great to be back. So today, as you mentioned, we're talking about Windows Azure Mobile Services. So this is a really, really new service that we've just recently released, basically within 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, on the 28th of August.
So this is one of the first crowds to see it in the flesh in an event.
That's right. So unfortunately, TechEd New Zealand slightly beat you. But you are basically the second people in the world to see this at a live event.
Cool.
Yeah, so all right. What is Windows Azure Mobile Services?
Let's flick across and have a look.
The goal of Windows Azure Mobile Services is essentially to make it incredibly easy to add a cloud backend service to your mobile apps. Right. So what I mean by that is if you think about your mobile apps, say a Windows Store app, for instance, you may want to be able to persist entities up in the cloud. You may want to be able to utilize some cloud service to send push notifications, and you may want to deal with sort of authenticating users and those sorts of things. So mobile services makes it really easy to do that, and I think the best way we can see how easy it actually is to do a demo of that today.
Awesome.
So today we're going to use the Windows Azure portal here, and for those of you that are familiar with it, you'll notice this new option called mobile services. So to create our first mobile service application, it's just as easy as whacking on new, selecting create, and then jumping into this mobile service with it. So the first thing we need to do is to provide a unique subdomain for our mobile service. So we're going to call this our TechEd AU mobile service. Now the next step here is essentially saying our mobile service is going to be accepting data, say, you know, a to-do list entity coming up to it. And we want to persist that within some data storage. And with mobile services, we use a SQL database running up in Windows Azure. So in this case, I'm going to select to use an existing SQL DB.
But you could add a new one if you needed to at this stage, as easily, yeah.
Sure. So if I wanted to add a new one, I'd just select create a new DB.
Cool.
But the cool thing about mobile services is you can utilize one DB for multiple mobile services. Nice. So you can have a multi-tenant DB for multiple services.
Nice.
So the next step here is to go and add my password, which hopefully I remember, to allow mobile services to now go and spin up that mobile service instance. So right now it's going off and it's creating our TechEd AUMS mobile service, and it's going and provisioning a new schema in that database that we chose that's going to identify this mobile service. And it's also creating a web tier for us for our client applications to interact with.
So this stuff's all happened behind the scenes without you having to write any code at this stage.
Yep, that's right. I have not written one single line of service code at the moment.
Wow, and we'll see how advanced the service stuff is in there in a minute.
Yep, so that's our service created now. And as you can see, that was just a matter of really seconds. So what we've got here now is basically the starting point for anyone who wants to get started and build their first mobile service application. You'll see that there's really three key scenarios that we're supporting today, and that's data, so your structured storage, push, and auth. So let's build that first application. So I'm going to the quick start here, and basically it's three steps. The first step is to install your tools.
You've already got those, yeah.
I've got that, and I've got the mobile services client SDK. The next step is to create a table, somewhere where we can store that data in the cloud for our to-do list. So this has created what we've called here a to-do item table. If I jump across here, what you'll note is we've now got a to-do item table. If I click into this, one key thing I'd like you to look at and see here, at the moment there's only an ID column.
Right.
So we'll revisit this later and we'll see some magic almost.
After you create all the schema and stuff.
I'm not going to create any schema, it's going to do it for me.
Wow. So, okay, let's check that out.
Right. So let's go back to our to-do items. So we've created the table. And now what we're going to do is to download a sample application and have a look at the source code for interacting with this mobile service.
So when you say download a sample application, this is one that's just a boilerplate one that hasn't got anything else in it.
Yep, this is a boilerplate application that basically shows you the minimum set of code that you need on the client to be able to interact with this service.
So you're going to have to go and enter all of your details about the service endpoint and all your keys and all that kind of stuff.
Yep, it'll just auto-drop that in for us, but it's only like four lines.
So you don't have to enter that.
No.
That's all going to happen for you.
Yeah, I'm wearing my ninja shirt today.
Okay, so all right, let's see.
Everything happens for me. So we've got two options here. We'll use C#. And if we were writing a native application, the mobile client SDK actually supports your C++ applications as well.
Cool.
So let's open this up. So we've downloaded that, and let's extract it. So this is our pure client application, and let's spin it up. And here we go. So there's our app.
So it's got a solution file, and it's got all the bits and pieces that go along with it to get you up and going straight away.
Yep. Yeah, okay. So I think let's look at the app, then we'll look at the code.
Okay.
So let's hit F5. So this is a simple to-do list. So what we see here on this Windows Store app is on the left, it's our to-do items. So we're going to add some data there.
Okay.
And over on the right, we're going to see that data that we've added to our list.
Right, okay.
So Andy, give me something to do.
Go to the party.
To the party. Okay.
That's on tomorrow, right? That's tonight, I mean.
Yep.
So that's all good.
And Andy can prep next session while I'm at the party. Right. So what we've just done is we've basically added items to that mobile service, and it's persisted in a SQL database in Windows Azure.
But the SQL database only had one column in it.
That's right. But let's look at the client code that we used to interact with that, and then let's see how that data was persisted in our DB. Because we really haven't added anything more than that ID column. We can also close out an item that we've completed.
So I've already prepped your session. Is that what you're saying? Nice.
I hope so.
Yeah, good.
It is tomorrow, so let's have a look at this source. So there's three key things that there is in this this solution. The first one is a reference to the mobile services client SDK. That's installed as part of that installer that we looked at. The next thing that we need when we want to interact with these services is basically an instance of the mobile service client. So this provides all of our CRUD operations, our insert, update, deletes, and query capability against this mobile service. So what it's dropped in is a reference out to our URL for the mobile service and an application key.
Uh-huh.
So I need this application key to be able to hit this mobile service to interact with it. So that's the first piece. The next piece is, well, how did we get those to-do items up into our mobile service?
Right.
So what you'll note here is this is the to-do entity that we're actually pushing up into our mobile service. You'll see it's got the ID there. It's got a to-do item name, which matches the table that was created.
Right.
And then it's got a text and complete column there. So if we scroll down there, that's our entity that we're going to save up. The next thing we do is we use that mobile service, and we get a reference to the to-do item table.
Nice.
You'll note that that's generic. So if you have multiple different types of entities you want to store, you just pass
different
in
table
the pass type there.
Right.
And then finally, if we want to do an insert, our insert operation to that mobile service now just becomes one line of code.
Cool.
We don't have to deal with HTTP web requests or anything like that, or the HTTP client. It's just purely one line of code to call into that.
That's awesome.
Yep.
And so you can do all the other stuff in around CRUD as well?
Yep. So this is a query. So you can see a simple query here with an expression to filter the results.
Okay, and that's just a link, standard link stuff, right? So even the Microsoft teams have stood on the shoulders of the people who came before them, and used link to do all of this stuff. It's all standard, all the things you'd expect to see in being able to query against an object, an object tree.
Yeah, it's about keeping things familiar to developers so they don't have to learn a whole bunch of new concepts.
Cool.
And lastly, there's the update. So I think we should jump across to our service here and actually see what's happened. So I've clicked on the data tab. And if I hit the to-do item here, we can see that now there's our data. So that's been persisted in SQL DB, and we can see that in the portal. What you'll note, though, is it's gone and added the text and complete column for me.
Cool.
So this is what we call dynamic schema. So it's inspected the entity that we're passing up, and then it's gone and created those columns in the table for us.
Awesome.
So we no longer have to go and deal with going and, writing SQL to create those columns or updating our service tier or anything like that. It's all dynamic and done for us. The next important thing here is the script option. So we've basically got out of the box this service tier now, right?
Right.
That can accept this to-do item entity or any other. And perhaps some of our applications require some kind of server-side logic.
So okay, like validation or because all code is evil, right? All input is evil.
Yep. Yeah? So if we wanted to go and add, say, validation on the to-do item text or whatnot, we've got this option to go and edit the scripts within the CRUD operation pipeline for our inserts, updates, our reads, and deletes, so we can provide some customization as to what happens before that entity is inserted.
So what language are we writing that in?
So this is actually written in JavaScript.
So are you running Node or something on the...
So mobile service is actually built out on top of Node.
Ah, cool.
And basically there, we edit that, and we're able to provide our script, and our script can perform actions like validation. It can go and call out to a third-party web service if we wanted to pull some data.
Could
in
kick off a workflow if we needed to. Yep. Notifications could happen, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, really neat.
Yep, kick off workflows, push notifications. The last thing here in this data tab that we've got is when this table was created, it's gone and assigned permissions to that. So for my CRUD operations, my inserts, updates, deletes, and reads, I can essentially come in and say, perhaps on insert, I only want authenticated users to be able to add items to my DB. Updates, well, perhaps only people with the application key. And read, perhaps I want everyone out there to be able to hit my service and read that data. And that's basically the data option of mobile services for you in a nutshell in about 10 minutes.
That's awesome, Nick. That's I love this stuff. This is really the essence of only writing the code that only you can write, because the stuff that you're seeing going on here is the busy work that everybody has to do. the stuff that Nick's adding on top of it is the domain knowledge that he has. What are the tasks that need to happen? What are the sorts of things that need to happen when a task occurs? Can I mark a task as complete when a particular other event occurs? That's all the domain knowledge. But all the stuff going on behind the scenes is really, you know, there's quite a fair bit of complex logic and coding going on there. Yeah. Mate, thank you very much.
Yeah, no probs. Cheers. Thank you. All right.
Nick Harris, folks. So what I wanted to do now is move in from Windows Azure mobile services into Windows Azure more generally. And we're going to talk a little bit about Windows Azure websites. And to do that, Nathan Totten from Microsoft in the US. Nathan. Mike, thanks for coming out.
All right. Now, I am not from Australia, so I'm just...
We just thought you were from somewhere like... No.
So thank you for having me. Yeah, so today we're going to talk about how to build a web application, a mobile web application. So Nick actually showed us a really easy way to build a web application that runs on, an application that runs on Windows 8. We're going to move to the web. So I'm going to show you something that's pretty new. We released a few months ago. It's called Windows Azure Websites. We're also going to connect up to a Windows Azure service to provide a rich connected experience.
Awesome.
So what I want to do is actually just start with a new application. Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
That'd be good.
So I'm going to start with a new application in Visual Studio 2012. We're actually going to build an ASP.mvc app. Select new project. And one thing to note here, which I think you wanted to point out, is we're using .NET 4.0. So right now, we don't actually support .NET 4.5 in Windows Azure websites. That is coming, but for now I'm going to use just a .NET 4.0.
I'm really pleased you pointed that out because I've been caught a number of times where I'm scratching my head about why this thing wouldn't work.
Yep. So new project here, and we're going to select the mobile template. So it comes with a lot of different templates, the internet application we're familiar with. This mobile template actually includes jQuery mobile, so it makes it very easy to build a rich mobile web application. So this is pulling in some NuGet packages, building up our app. Let me just go ahead and run this to see what we have. So pretty simple, mobile website,
standard
site. This would render obviously on any phone, iPhone, Windows Phone, any mobile device. So let's close that up. So what I want to do is actually build a little bit more rich application. We're gonna connect this up to Windows Azure Service Bus and actually make it so people can send a message to you and myself
awesome.
On stage. Let's go ahead and switch over to the slide really quick.
Yeah, sure.
So we're going to use what's called Windows Azure Service Bus message queues. This queuing service actually allows us to communicate with different services running in different areas. So we're going to run our web application running in Windows Azure in the cloud. We're going to actually pull in the messages that the users or the people in the audience are going to send to us to our on-premise application, which is just a very simple console.
So you're going to get these guys to send messages live
yes,
on stage?
Live on stage. So hopefully everything's kept appropriate, but I don't know.
Good luck with
we'll
that.
We'll have to see. So, so Service Bus, a really simple queuing service, allows us to communicate between different, different data centers and different...
The other thing is that it all happens asynchronously, right? That's the other very cool thing.
Yep.
So because there's a queue in the middle, the things don't need to be connected full time.
Absolutely, yep. So to begin, I want to actually just edit my controller. So you saw we had that home controller. I'm just going to go ahead and add some code that's already built here. This is using my just a regular index controller, and then I'm just adding an action here that allows to receive a message. Notice here we don't have this queue client installed, which this is part of the Service Bus library.
Right.
So I'm actually going to install that Service Bus library with NuGet.
So NuGet, I want to stop you there because NuGet is another one of those fantastic examples of only writing the code that only you can write. I don't know if you guys have used or played with NuGet, but if you haven't, get onto it straight away. It's a way of injecting or importing the dependencies and all the references you need to get a particular thing done. So if you haven't played with NuGet, check it out during this week and chat to the people who are using it.
Yep. So we have a variety of different packages for Windows Azure storage, caching, things like that. I'm going to use the Service Bus package. And this does install all our dependencies along the chain, too, so we don't need to worry about managing all the different dependencies, in this case, Configuration Manager. So let's just install that. And this actually installs, again, everything we need to use Service Bus. It also actually edits our web config file to set up kind of the connection string information we
nice.
Need, which I'll show in just a second. So now that we've added that, let's add that add a using statement for that queue client. And as you can see here, adding a message to the queue is really simple. We just create this queue client, create a new brokered message, and then send that off into the cloud, and we're ready to go.
Awesome.
I want to edit my view next. Just going to change this index controller, delete that. And again, I've pre-written some code to save some time. And this is just a simple form, a text box, and an input.
Right.
And then the last thing I mentioned, the NuGet package actually added this line to our connection string to enable it to use our service bus messaging queue. We add our namespace and our key. I'm just going to go ahead and delete that and add the one that I already have ready to go. So now what we have is a application that's still running locally, but it's connected to the cloud via the service bus.
Cool.
So now we have this simple messaging app. Hello, New Zealand. We've moved to a different country.
What time is it?
Oh,
it
must be Australia. I have no idea. Australia. I spelled that right. Hopefully. Did I spell that right? Australia. Yes, I did. All right. With an exclamation point. So we're going to send this. So now this is actually getting sent up. It just takes a second the first time to kind of warm up. Sent this up to the cloud, running in Windows Azure Data Center using the service bus.
Right.
So the next thing we need to do is deploy this. We don't want to run this on our local computer. We want to run this in Windows Azure. So this is where we're going to bring in Windows Azure websites. Nick showed us again the mobile services. Same portal, very easy to create a Windows Azure website. So I'm going to create this AU message. And in just a few seconds, we're going to create our website.
That is quick. Just a few seconds.
And waiting. There we go.
Cool.
Oops, wrong one. Go back. AU message. So we have our dashboard, very similar to what you saw with Nick's service. You can monitor the website, do configuration, you can scale, we can go up to multiple instances, things like that. But what I want to show is how easy it is to actually deploy to Windows Azure websites. So I'm going to download what we call a publish profile. This profile contains all the information necessary to publish to Windows Azure using web deploy, our username, our service URL, and actually even our password in an encrypted format.
Right. So no more mucking around with all the management certificates and having to set all that stuff up. That just happens automatically?
Exactly.
Wow.
So switching back to that MVC application, right-click, publish, and then I'm just going to import that publish profile I just downloaded. And as you can see, all the settings are set for us.
Nice.
And I'm just going to click publish, and in just a few seconds, we're actually going to have that application running in the cloud. One thing to note, that's actually done. Oops.
Let's see what happened.
Web deploy task failed. All right, let's try this again.
See what happened last time. Perhaps.
Hang on. Reset. It's a bit strange. And after three tries, hopefully it'll work. Everyone's using the internet, so I think. Everyone get off the internet. All right, looks like it's taking it. Okay, so one of the really cool things about web deploy to Windows Azure websites is it's actually an incremental publish. So the first time this is working now, the first time we're publishing, it's actually uploading all of our assemblies, all the dependencies we have, and our full application. But subsequent deployments to Windows Azure are actually going to, oh, someone hit the site, hang on, another really quick issue. So the... All right, this is going extremely well. Give it 1 second. So one of the things about Windows Azure Web Deploy, what I was going to say is incremental deployments. There we go. Incremental deployments to Windows. Yeah, there, everyone a round of applause for it working. Three tries to publish. Couple refreshes, no problem, super easy.
Yeah.
So what actually was happening is someone actually hit the site while I was deploying. There's a known issue that if that happens on the first deployment, it can actually cause a problem. So we are aware of that. Hopefully it'll get fixed soon. This isn't preview, but just a simple stop and start, and then we're ready to go.
Cool.
So again, with Web Deploy, this is an incremental deployment. So on subsequent deploys, we're only going to publish the change file. So this is a very fast, very easy way to publish to Windows Azure.
Cool.
So now we have this running actually up in the cloud. Let me just send another message. Finally working. Probably spelled that wrong. Oh, well. So we've got, again, two messages now in Windows Azure. Now I have this client-side application, kind of the same code. We're using that same service bus library. We're creating the queue, and then we're just looping through all the messages that are in our service bus queue. And I'm just going to run that locally. So we should have two messages in there, at least two. Uh-oh. Oh, geez. All right. So, awesome. You guys have already figured out that. So, well, this is awkward. All right. So, yeah, we've got a real, so what we have here is a really simple application. You see, in just a few seconds, in just a few minutes and a few minor issues, we were actually able to create a website locally, a mobile website, deploy that to the cloud, and actually connect that to a service running in Windows Azure and connect that to our local environment. So you can imagine how this could actually be used to connect a website running in Windows Azure to something that's on-premise running in your own data center. Super easy. So thank you, whoever is writing those wonderful messages. But that's all really easy. 5 minutes, and we're deployed to the cloud. Let's go ahead and switch back to the slides.
I think we should.
And that is it.
That's awesome. Thanks, Nathan.
Absolutely.
So, folks, I really do think that this is another one of those places where you can look at all the complexity that could have been going on behind the scenes and was going on behind the scenes that's been abstracted away. We don't need to worry about a bunch of the things that happened back there, but we did get to get on with building the code that we could build and adding the value that we add. So this is all very well, and you know, lots of us have done this stuff individually, but we all know that in the real world, we tend to work in teams of more than just one, as a general rule. And to do that, we need to have a way of collaborating, and we need to have a way of being repeatable in terms of our things like our deployment and a way of managing our source and all those kinds of things. So to talk about developer operations, I'd like to invite Chris Bermelay on stage to show us a similar sort of thing, but on a scale that involves a team of more than one. G'day, Chris. So, mate, what are you going to show us?
Well, basically, I'm going to deploy the application, Nathan's application, using Team Foundation Service.
All right.
For Team Foundation in the cloud.
Oops, we'll go across to the right. There we go.
All right, so there's a couple of things you need. You need a Team Foundation Services account, which I have here.
Right.
All right, so it's free still. We'll charge you later. And you need an Azure account, which I've got here. So what I'm going to do, and then we're going to flick over to some slides while this happens, I'm going to create a brand new team project. I'm going to call this...
So everyone understands what's going on here, you're spinning up a team project on Team Foundation Server that's living somewhere in Azure.
Absolutely.
You don't have to monitor or manage any of that stuff yourself. It's all someone's taking care of that busy work.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm also going to create a website, exactly what you saw before.
Right.
And then... if you would just flick over to the slides quickly, and
you ready to go?
We're ready to go. All right, so the scenario that I want to basically take you through is I create a new team project. It'll take, a minute or so to create. Yeah, it's going through there. I've also created a website. It's probably already done. Once I've done all that, what I need to do is associate the two. I need to make Team Foundation Service aware of this Azure account. So basically, we're going to marry up the two together. There's about 2-3 clicks I need to do to get that done. And then I need to get some content up there. I'm going to use Nathan's application just as an example, which I have locally on Visual Studio. It's not under source control yet. So I'm basically going to add the source control to TFS in the cloud, check it in, and that will auto-deploy the application into Azure.
Sorry, hang on one sec. I just want to make sure I got that step. You check it in,
and it does
a build.
It does the build.
It deploys it automatically. You don't have to worry about doing any of the deploy stuff.
No.
That happens as a part of that process. That's pretty cool.
When I marry up the two accounts, step number 6, it creates actually build definition that knows about these two things, and it automatically kicks off the build and the deploy. And then subsequent changes, obviously, as soon as I check it in, they get deployed.
Okay, that's
so
pretty neat.
So doesn't get much easier than that. So team project is done.
So we'll go back and have a look.
One more thing. You gave me 5 minutes to do all this. All right, it's absolutely ridiculous, but I'll try to do it in 5 minutes. Team project is done. The web service is... I haven't even clicked it yet. All right, I'll take about 20 seconds. As soon as I have that, I'm going to marry up the two. All right, awesome. Here it is.
So now you're going into the website UI.
Into the website, I'm going to set up TFS
and just click
publishing.
Nice.
And all I need to do is find my account. So here we go. Don't use this account, please. And I'm going to select the team project I just created a second ago. When this comes up, accept. And here we go. Here's my new team project.
Wow, so that just puts...
So this is how I'm going to associate the two. That will create a build definition in TFS that knows all about the Azure website. All right, so that's this bit, and hopefully this will work. It's not like the last demo.
Oh, I think you may be tempting the demo gods there. I hope you sacrificed enough goats.
I know, push my luck. I know. But I'm going to fire up Visual Studio right here.
So you fired up Visual Studio from within...
From within Azure.
Azure,
and
okay.
It will actually, as you can see, we're actually connecting now, hopefully, to the TM Foundation server that I just created. And
wow,
here
so
it is.
The project
so
itself has now been... Yeah, so you didn't have to go through any of that process of adding
servers
or any of those sorts of things.
No, it knows the context. It's all
right.
Good. And so here I have the application that you saw a second ago. And in my solution, all I need to do is add it to source control and check it in. So I add solution to source control. I'll accept all the defaults. That works for me. And then when this is done, we'll have pending changes, obviously, and we'll call that the first check-in or something like that. Voila, and I check it in.
Okay,
that check-in will now upload, 100 files?
Right.
And when this is done, the build will kick off, and if the build is successful, it'll deploy the application.
And
the cloud.
How can you monitor what's going on with the build?
Oh, you just look at the build from here, or you can go into TFS. Go here. Here's the build.
There's the build going. And is there anywhere else you can
see? There's
one
queued. Here we go. That's the build that's queued. Of course, I can go into my TFS account here. Connect. And navigate to it. Look at the build. Queued. Here we go.
Wow.
This is the build in the cloud. Just wait until this is done.
And then it'll just automatically deploy. That's
and then it will, yes, it will deploy. When this is then finally deployed, then you will see actually the website popping up.
Chris, that's awesome.
That's it. Yeah. I managed to do this in 5 minutes or less. Thank you very much.
So I don't know about you guys, but one of the things that occurs to me whenever I start thinking about build projects and those sorts of things is I need an IT professional to do this stuff for me because they understand all this kind of thing. And while I'm not saying that you won't ever require an IT professional, there's a bunch of stuff now that some busy work that's going on behind the scenes, so you can use your IT professionals for higher level work. Yeah? And this is a very great, a very, very cool example of exactly that. I want to switch gears a little bit now. We've talked a lot about services and cloud and the web and those sorts of things. But I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about some client-side development. And some of you will have heard me talk about Lightswitch before. Visual Studio Lightswitch is a component of Visual Studio 2012. And it ships in the box with every SKU from professional up. And it allows, it really is the simplest way to create business applications and services for the desktop and the cloud. And it sounds like a whole lot of marketing hype, but I want to show you very quickly, and I've got less than 5 minutes for this demo as well. I want to show you very quickly an application that I built in basically 3 hours. That allows me to track all of my library, keep things like cover shots, details, information about the authors, and put that up in the cloud. And what's more, it exposes all of that data as an OData endpoint that's live that you can get at today. So, find the appropriate button to press. And this is Visual Studio 2012, and I've loaded up a Lightswitch project. Now, the core part of any Lightswitch project is data. And the data I've started with are three tables, or three entities, if you like. The books, the authors of those books, and the genres of those books. So techno, thriller, nonfiction, and so on. I've also got a concept of countries, because I've got the nationality of each author listed. Now, I don't have a list of countries in my own system. I went and got those from another place. In fact, there's an OData source called Countries, which exists on the web that I've used, and that comes with a whole bunch of additional information that might be useful at some stage. You know, the top level domain, the telephone code, all that kind of stuff. It's amazing what's out there. I didn't have to go and find this. I didn't have to go and enter this data myself or maintain it. Someone else does that for me. I'm only writing the data that only I can write. So, what I can do now is I've written a couple of screens, and we'll see what these screens look like. And if you want to see how to build these screens and so on, I'm doing a session on Friday, by the way, that you can come and have a look at a lot more detail about all this stuff. But I've built a number of screens, and what I can do is I can go ahead and I can just publish this application. Now I'm going to publish it again to a Windows Azure website. Interestingly, we at Microsoft, subscribe to the same view of only writing the code that only we can write. And so the Lightswitch team have taken the work from the Azure team, and the deployment wizard, the publish wizard, it looks very similar to the one that you saw Nathan use. And the reason for that is it's the same. All the details are the same there. I'll just hit all these details here and hit publish. Now, I'm not going to publish it at the moment because I just want to show it to you running, and I've only got 5 minutes. So let's have a look at what this might look like in the cloud. So this is called mylibrary.azurewebsites.net. You can go there if you want to. But one of the interesting things is I've added auth to this site, so you'll need a username and password to log in. And you know what? At this stage, I'm not giving it to you. But we'll, if you come to my session later on, you might on Friday, you might get it then. In fact, there's a couple of username and passwords on here that have different levels of access. So remember that this took less than 3 hours to create, this application. What I can do is I can have a look at all of the books in my database. I could and notice a whole bunch of things that are happening asynchronously here. So on the left here, we have the books. I can do things like sort by, let's say, rating or by title. And all this stuff is stuff that I didn't have to write. This is stuff that came out of the box, the sorting, for example. I can go and have a look at the authors. And, of course, this is a standard sort of form, a list and details form. Authors, here's Tom Clancy, here's the books he's written over on the right-hand side. Notice that came in asynchronously. All of that stuff happened behind the scenes. It's very nice, and I can easily add new authors or add new books at any stage in here. Now, this is all very cool. But some of you have said, well, that's a Silverlight client. What good is it to me? And I do want to show you one quick thing. So I'm going to switch across. We might just switch across to the lipstick cam if we can. I'll log into Dave's. I think I'll log into Dave's. Maybe I won't. Let's try again. Okay. Everyone saw that, I'm sure. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start up a website. Now, this website is the same data you saw, running off a service, but now is being presented as HTML5. Now, if you haven't seen what Lightswitch is doing with HTML5, it's definitely worth coming to my Friday session. This is a touch-friendly HTML5. It uses the jQuery mobile for its back end. I can do things like drill into bits and pieces here. And notice what's happening in the back end. The genre is coming down asynchronously. In a moment, you'll see the genre appear. It's got to go and do another query to get that. It lazy loaded the genre to techno thriller. If I click on the author here, then it'll take me to the author's details. I've got very easily, I can go in to see what book it is and so on. And that's lovely. The other thing I want to show you is that I can do exactly the same thing on my Windows phone. And it'll render it slightly differently, but it'll be the same information. So it'll go off into the same place in the cloud, lightswitch.cloud.autechid.net. And in a moment, all this stuff will come down as well. And so very quickly, I've created applications that are that use the same data sources but present information in different ways. So this is one of the neatest things that I can tell you about, only writing the code that only you can write. All right, might switch back to slides if we can. So, folks, Lightswitch is pretty neat. And as I said, one of the things that happened at the back end there is we created an OData source. And I set my next two demos a challenge to use that data and show off some cool stuff around the other client platform technologies. So next thing I'd like to do is invite Nick Hodge up on stage to show us what he's done with the data with Windows 8. Nick. Oh. All right. So we might have to bring your...
Bring my machine forward. Plug in the power.
Find your mouse. Oh, it's in your pocket. Excellent. Very sensible.
Well, I'd left it actually on the stage here earlier today, and that was quite alarming for me not to have my mouse in my pocket. Okay. So, Windows 8. You've all heard of it. I'm sure many of you have it installed. I was one of the people that was at the App Fest last night. I've only had about 2 hours sleep. I could be ranting. I could be 3 years in the future. I got no idea where I am. But one of the things...
That's got nothing to do with AppFest, though.
Oh, yeah, good point. What I'm here to do is show you taking the data that Andrew sent in an email saying, hey, put this data into a great Windows 8 app. And I promptly ignored that and did something else, which is pretty well much my way these days. And since my managers aren't here, I can say that. I built a Windows 8 app, but I used the Windows Azure Mobile Services, because if it's not in the cloud, basically you get, you know, minus points on your employee evaluation or something. I've got no idea. So I just basically said, oh, I've got to cloud this thing.
It was new and shiny.
Yeah, it was new and it was new and shiny. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So here I have my, just go to number four. Here I have my Windows 8 start screen. It should reset in just a moment. If not, it could be fun. I'm just going to go into my application. I called it Book, 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 because developers is take cliche. And also because what I'm doing is actually bookstalking or eye-worming Andrew Coates. I'm watching what books he's reading, and I can therefore... It's a bit creepy. I won't go into it.
Yeah.
But here are the list of books, and this is a Windows 8 application that I wrote during the week. And,
awesome. So you're basically taking the data. This is not taken from the data, from the OData source, right? You've put it somewhere else.
Yeah, I put it into the Windows Azure Mobile Services, exactly what Nick Harris demonstrated earlier today. So the ABL guy is just going to do a quick little reset here. Yeah, that's the menu option. Yep, left. Yep, that's it. Got it. Cool. See? Yeah. Cool.
Perfect.
Perfect. And so, yeah, so that's Azure Mobile Services, and I built an app, and I use Fiddler to have a look at the streams. And
so how long did this take you to make?
Well, I told my boss that it took me 5 days.
Okay. So how much time did you spend on the beach?
Zero.
Yeah.
How embarrassing. You're embarrassing me. Occupation, basically, HR, where's HR? No, sorry. So it actually, it's probably, in terms of really solid work, it took me 3 days to do stuff. But I learnt the Okra framework, which is a Windows C-sharp WinRT framework. I wanted to learn that, so I used that. It's an MVVM library I used. And actually added some code into it and did some other cool stuff with it. And I wanted to have a look at the Fiddler stream of the stuff going back to Windows Azure Mobile Services. I did a little bit more than probably what I should have. But you know, here's the app and it's wonderful, so I can look at Hitchhikers. You got a lot of nerdy books.
Yeah, yeah,
Better than dirty books, but they're nerdy books. Okay, so yeah, that's
so what else does it do?
Well, being a Windows 8 app, you've got to integrate it into the platform. So, one of the things that we can do is bring up the charms bar, do a search. I can do a search inside my application, and I can search for, say, Foundation, which returns the list of books that have Foundation in the title, which all Isaac Asimov books.
Awesome.
Also, if, say, I'm looking at a particular book, mostly harmless, I can edit stuff and that sort of thing, but I've also got a different charm in here, which is the share charm. I don't really want to put an email client in this app. I don't want to put a Twitter client in this app, even though I could, I won't. I don't want to put stuff to upload to all the different services.
Right.
So one of the cool things that Windows 8 has is this ability to share. So I can share things up out to other apps and use their greatness to do cool things. So the MetroTwit, being a great Australian written Windows 8 app, I can then share this in MetroTwit, and I just get to format the text, and Coastly has read mostly harmless. I'm going to Coastly is mostly harmless.
That's a matter of opinion, apparently.
Yeah, and send tweet.
That's awesome.
And then I get use MetroTwit to do that.
That's very cool. And I think the key thing here is that the platform provides these interfaces to do sharing and searching. And so you don't have to write any of that stuff in terms of talking to the other applications. It turns the problem for the nerds out there from a geometric problem to an arithmetic problem in terms of you only having to write once or one per application rather than one per application combination.
So, for instance, the details page one view model has the code in it that's doing the sharing of that tweet that I showed you in a moment. So I've added a couple of lines of comment there. Basically, I get a transfer request. This is an event that's triggered. I basically say, I'll grab the book out of the view model. Then I set, Coatsy's read a new book, and I say, here's the text. I could also say, here's the image, or here's the HTML, or here's the custom JSON format.
How hard is it to add this stuff to a Windows 8 app?
As far as my boss is concerned, it takes about a day. As far as they are the lines of code that I wrote. It's more than one line of code, but they are the lines of code that I wrote from and looked from dev.windows.com. A little differently with the search results, because there's a bit more of an interaction when you search, going backwards and forwards, getting suggestions and that sort of stuff. There's a few more little entry points.
So in this, I just basically said book, add a new item. And in this instance, it knows I was in C#. It knows I was making a Windows 8 app. So therefore, you know, I wanted to put in a search control. Interestingly enough, the Okra framework, which is an open source framework, also has a search thing in it, but I didn't actually get to incorporate that in here. Cool. Also, this other thing is this cool async await. If there's anything inside of new in .NET 4.5 running in the desktop world and also in UNRT is this async await stuff. I'm in love with it.
It's very, very cool stuff.
I'm going to marry it. It is worth looking at. It really makes your apps responsive. It's really cool.
That's awesome. So you said there was one more thing you were adding as well.
Yeah, so one of the things that Nick showed was the ability to do notifications. Notifications is not that...
Hang on, sorry.
You've just read 50 Shades of Grey?
Hang on a
what? Second. What?
That you weren't going to...
I wasn't, you know, but you did. Okay. There it is. Just popped in. 50 Shades of Grey. Set in Seattle, a dark, cold, wet city in the Pacific Northwest. Looking outside, a software company executive laments at the drabness of the cloud.
Yeah.
I think that summarised the book.
Well, pretty much that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you actually, your comment, review comment says here, less colourful than you expected.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so subtle word colourful. Jokes there. Yeah. It took me a whole day to actually write those jokes. So sorry. And it's also horror. You put it in.
It is pretty horrible.
Okay, but that notification, just to sort of explain how that works, is using Windows Azure Mobile Services. When you create an Azure Mobile Service, you say you want to add push notifications to your app. This took me about 5 minutes to do. I was really expecting to spend 5 days just doing notifications because basically you're sending the application key and another key up to a server and then getting a URL and you're sending the URL and that's storing it somewhere and then that sends it to you have to package up an XML message that goes to the notification server and that then sends it to your client app. And you go, if you don't get your keys right and all that sort of stuff, you know, the world essentially collapses. But with Windows Azure Mobile Services, it was extremely easy. So I just sort of added push notifications. It's a nice little helper here. We won't go through this line by line. Got the stuff back, the keys and stuff back, put it into my app, added the lines of code to my app, which is all here. Very easy. And that's how the notifications work.
That's awesome.
It's absolutely awesome.
So Nick Harris is going to be talking lots more about Windows Azure Mobile Services in his session tomorrow. So if you want to go and see some of this stuff, get along to that. That's very, very cool.
Yeah, there's just some really cool stuff out there today. Whether you're getting stuff like NuGet, open source stuff, or your Microsoft stuff, to build apps on Windows 8 is just absolutely awesome. And the AppFest, I think, last night proved that, or overnight and through to the day. Just doing cool stuff is really fun. Great time to be a developer. And your apps are frontmost and foremost in the hands of people. This is probably the first time in history that we've had that opportunity.
Well, here's the great segue about leading the land grab.
And this is where you guys have the opportunity as Coetzee said, lead the land grab. What we're offering is for every tech ed attendee who builds 3 apps by a certain date, we're offering some prizes. Essentially, this wonderful QR code here has the terms and conditions. I don't have half an hour to go through them, even though our legal department has said that I should. I'm not. So if you never see me again, it's because I'm in Siberia. But definitely go and look at this. If you build 3 apps by that deadline, you're in for a prize. It's really a lot of fun, as my blue sticker says.
Yeah, yeah. But more than a lot of fun, I think, it gives you an opportunity to be in the marketplace,
yeah,
in the Windows Store first. It's a first mover advantage. It's a huge advantage. So now's the time to get in there and make sure you're amongst the first. You saw some of the stuff the Kiwis were talking about with the advantage of being in the store early. Yeah. Nick, thanks very much, man. That's very cool. Oh. That was so exciting. You knocked off my microphone. That's how exciting that was. Enough for the first time. So that's all very well. We've got a great story around having Windows 8 stuff, but if you happen to be out on the road and you've only got your phone with you, what do you do? Well, of course, you call Dave Glover and he builds your Windows 8, a Windows phone application. Nice to see you, Dave.
So you've all spotted my password, so I guess I'm going to be changing that the next thing.
Sorry about that.
So as you probably, a number of you have seen, there's been, I've talked to TechEd for a couple of years about Windows Phone. And if I think about in the last 2 years, about 2 years ago, I stood up here and I think I showed 3 apps. I think there was a Tower Defense game, There was Shopping Secrets, and there was Domain.com. And I think since then, those are two awesome apps that I got to show. And since then, the marketplace now has something over 100,000 applications in the last 2 years. And I guess the main thing I'd like to thank is the people in this room that actually went out there and made those applications. Absolute rocking, guys. So thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the ecosystem, the app ecosystem for Windows Phone is really rocketing along. But the thing that I want to talk about is about the component ecosystem and really how you can use those to really create great user experiences and save time and save money and get out there and build great applications, which otherwise might take a lot of time and a lot of money. So the example I'm going to show you here is a very simple one, building on the example here that Andrew has built in Lightswitch and those OData services. And yes, you will see that I actually do have some credentials on here based on the demos before. And I'd also like to thank David Barella out here from Infogistics for helping me there. And the other thing about the conference here, absolutely check out the component vendors. I know that Infogistics are here and Telerik are here, and those guys can really help you get on board and build applications much faster.
So, Dave, that's a really key point, actually. So when we talk about only writing the code that only you can write, at the moment we've been talking about the stuff that maybe third parties have provided or that Microsoft have done. There's a really key thing here that if you can leverage the stuff the component vendors build, you will save yourselves far, far more than it'll cost you to buy those components. And so check out some of the stuff that Dave's going to show you, but then go and check out, as Dave says, some of the component vendors' capabilities on this, on the stands and online, and you'll see that we can just get on with writing the code that we as developers are good at and let the component developers get on with writing the code that they're good at, which is displaying our data in a beautiful and rich way.
Absolutely. And I'd love to say this application took 5 days, but I think with Dave's help, it actually took a lot less. And you can see there's very little code in here to actually go off and call the OData services here. So you can see the link out there, the URL to that. Basically, I go and create a proxy for it, set up the credentials for it, create a data service collection, basically look at the data entities and attach and bind those to the UI. And then effectively here, a link statement to go shape the data that I want to get back. And then I go and do an async load.
So basically, you've just pulled down a data set, Dave.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. And then up here, I've got a bit of XAML, and basically taking that data and just binding it up to the UI for the end user. So if I can run this up, and you've done these types of things before, it's very simple to go and grab the data. And it'll just take a moment to go and call the web service.
La, la, la. La, la, la. So it's actually,
work.
Yep, there we go.
And so here you've got a very simple example. I've called that OData service, which Andrew basically, there was almost no lines of code to actually go and create the OData service. And in consuming that in Windows Phone, there's very little code to actually go and do that. And if you're anything like me, and you see it bind, you think, yes, job done.
Dave, it's ugly.
Yes, well, exactly. I know. So we really want to be able to take these whole user experiences a whole stage further. So you can see I've done some really basic data binding in this example here. And I'll just come over here and stop the application. And what I'm going to do is comment out the beautiful work that I've done there and comment in the fantastic work from David Barella.
And from Infogistics, right?
And from Infogistics in this case. And what this is going to do for me with no code changes on my part, I'm going to add in a grouping by. In this case, I'm going to be grouping by genre. I'm also going to be adding in jump lists, and I'm also going to be adding in a search capability. So all those kinds of things that end users love in terms of being able to go and build the application.
And the only change you've made at this stage is you've bound to a different control.
Exactly. So fire that up again. So it's going to go and hit that OData service.
Pull that data down, including all those images.
And voila.
Look at that.
So again, with absolutely no changes, if I go and tap on that, I'll get a jump list so I can look at the genres that are in the book list. Jump around here. I can go and do search. And if I go and do search for red, you'll see I've now got some search capability in there. And it's work that I have not had to go and do. So the real beauty of this is it gives me an opportunity to focus on obviously the core assets, the core things that I'm going to bring to this application. And going back to Andrew's idea, just kind of like focusing on the stuff that I'm good at and not having to write the code that I basically don't have to write. So that's the kind of gist of what this demo is about. So, yep, without further ado.
Well, I was going to say, that's awesome, Dave, and you've got something you wanted people to do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know a number of you are already signed up on this, but we run a Windows Phone Australian Developer Community site. So the URL there is wp.msdeveloper.com.au. If you want to get involved in Windows Phone development, then please do sign up on that site. And you can get access to resources, loan phones, tokens up there to get onto the marketplace. For those up there, you know, I run competitions and things like that. We're going to be running a series of workshops and things like that in the near future. So really, sign up on there. That's a place, and that's a great place to understand what we're doing around the Windows Phone developer community. So thank you very much.
Dave, that's awesome. Thanks so much.
Awesome.
So folks, what you've seen up to right now is stuff that's shipping today and you can use in production even as we speak. What I want to talk to you about next is one possible future. Now, we've heard a lot about touch first and this concept of Windows 8 being a touch first OS. And what implications does that have for us as developers? Not as developers in terms of our end product, but as developers in terms of our everyday productivity. How do you develop on a touch first OS? What does a touch first IDE look like? Well, what I want to do is show you a prototype application that the guys at Microsoft Research have written as a thought about how to go about doing touch first development or touch development. So if I switch across to here, and then switch across to here because it's the right button. What I've got here is an application, as I said, from the Microsoft Research guys called Touch Develop. And I'm going to kick it off on my phone here. And as soon as I do kick it off, I should get connected into the application. So there we go. It's connecting up. And so now you're seeing on the big screen here exactly what I'm seeing on here. Now, what I want to do is create an application that goes and has a look in my pictures library and chooses 5 pictures at random, gives them a tint, and then displays them for me on my screen so I can have a look at them. And I'm going to show you how easy that is to do in this Touch Develop. So I click plus, and I'm going to create a new script. We'll call it my script. And what we'll see here is the IDE pop up. And this is the concept of the IDE. It has code and events and data. And I'm just going to go into the main method. And the main method at the moment has basically a sample hello world. And the hello world just pops something onto the screen which says Touch Develop is cool. Okay, that's all very well, but we want to do something a bit more complex than that. So I'm going to take that away, and I'm going to add some more code. And I'm going to add a command. In fact, the first thing I want to do is I want to put 5 things on the screen. So being a lazy programmer, I'll use a for loop. And I'm going to count to 5. And you see, all this stuff is happening in a touch interface, which is pretty interesting, I think. Now, I'm not saying this is the way you're going to do development in the future, but it is a really interesting set of concepts. So after this, I'm going to add a new command where I go and have a look at the media on my phone and the pictures there, and I'm going to choose a random one. And I actually want to store that in a variable, so I'll do that. So now I have a variable with a random picture from my phone. And I'm going to take that variable and I'm going to colorize it. So I'll take the picture, which is now appearing, you notice, in the left-hand side there, and I will choose a method to use it, and I'll tint it, and I won't make it sepia because then it'll just look like Instagram. I'll choose a random color. And then what I'll do is I'll take that picture and I'll post it to the wall. So I'll take command, picture, post to wall. And finally, when that loop is finished, so outside the loop, I will add a command that says vibrate the phone, so tell me it's done. So I'll just say phone, vibrate, and I'll tell it to do it for 1/2 a second. That's pretty cool. Okay. That'll be nice if it works. I'm going to add one more thing. The last thing I want to be able to do is I want to be able to repeat that process so it happens again. I can get another 5 pictures. So what I'm going to do is add an event, and I'm going to add the shake event to this phone that says when you shake the phone, clear what's on the wall currently, wall, clear, and then go back and run it all again. Code main. And so now I have an application that will take 5 pictures out of my 5 random pictures out of my picture library, colorize them. We've got a blue theme going here at the moment, or maybe some green. and display them on my screen. And it vibrates. You can't tell it vibrated, but it did. My hand went... I'll do that again later on if you like. And I shook my phone and I got another 5 pictures. I reckon that's pretty cool. I didn't have to actually touch a keyboard to do this. Yeah? That's pretty neat stuff. Now, that's all very well, all very cool. There's a bunch of other things you can do with this that I won't show you necessarily right now, but I will tell you about. The first thing is that I could tap on one of those pictures and save it to my library and do all those kinds of things. I could invert colors and there's a whole lot of API things that happen with pictures. But it's not just pictures, it's sounds. It's got access to your entire contacts list. It's got access to all the things the phone can do. It's got access to services like translation and mapping and all those sorts of things. Then the guys at MSR have done a bunch of work around how do I get people to explain what they want to do without actually writing code. And so they've done a whole lot of work on natural language parsing. And so you write in or you type in what you want to do. Give me 5 pictures from my library and it'll go off to a service, parse that natural language and return 3 or 4 options that you could use to do exactly that thing in code. It is phenomenal stuff. Now, finally, what you can do is you can upload your application to, or your script, what they call a script, to the Script Bazaar. Notice it's not called the application marketplace or the store. It's the bazaar. I like that. And then anyone can see what's going on with the script. They can download it and fiddle with it and play with it. But you can also, from that same place, say, I want to create an application out of this script. And then what happens is it goes off to a service in the cloud and asks you for, you know, some screenshots and some icons and all the things it needs to go to create a zap file and creates a zap file for you in the background and lets you download the zap file, which you can then upload to the Windows Phone Marketplace. It's a really, really interesting way of doing things. Finally, it's actually a great way of teaching programming to kids as well. So all of the concepts and the models about how to do programming are there without having to learn a bunch of the difficult syntax. So if you're interested, I'd strongly recommend you have a squeeze at the TouchDevelop site, touchdevelop.com, and catch me during the week and have a bit more of a chat about it, because I think although it's not necessarily the future, it's one possible future and it's definitely something you should look at. Okay, so we're just going to finish up here now and before we go across to the keynote. There's a few things I want to remind you about. There are competitions running for both Windows Phone and Windows 8. Go and sign up at those URLs, w8.msdeveloper.com.au or wp.msdeveloper.com.au, and all the terms and conditions are up there. Definitely worth a squiz at those. After this, we're going off to the keynote. Now, the keynote is next door, but the way we're getting there is we're going back out the doors you came in, past where the T-shirts were. We're going to turn left and go all the way around until you get to the entry to Arena 2, and we're going to go in there. And that's where it's at. We'll be doing that in just a moment. I want to remind you of some of the things we saw today. We saw Windows Azure Mobile Services with Nick. We saw the Azure websites with Nathan. And both of those guys are doing sessions in the all-day Azure stream tomorrow. Tomorrow, learn Windows Azure Stream all day, Central C, sit yourself down, get yourself comfortable, plug yourself in, and get Azured all day. We just saw some developer operations from Chris Bermelay. We saw some light switch from me. We saw Windows 8 from the other Nick. We saw Windows Phone from Dave, and we saw Touch Develop from the other me. This stuff is very, very cool. I want to leave you with a couple of things. As developers, I strongly encourage you to be boastful and lazy in the best possible way. And in doing that, make sure that you always only write the code that only you can write. Thanks, guys.